From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm manic pixie dream girl Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. So good to have you here. You know, it's winter in Chicago, where we all live. It's a special time. We huddle inside with our families and friends, unable to go outside for weeks at a time. And eventually, we start gazing at our family and friends and looking around for an axe.
Which is why we thought it would be wiser to take a week off and get out of town. So this week, we're bringing back some of our favorite celebrity interviews of the past year.
We start with Florence Henderson, Mrs. Brady to a whole generation. But as we found out when we spoke to her, so much, much more. So we were reading your biography, and it's extraordinarily impressive. Prior to you getting the role of Carol Brady, you were, among other things, the first female guest host for Johnny Carson?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, I go back a long way, Peter.
I can imagine. So you were a theater actress. In fact, you were an award-winning actress here in Chicago, I was proud to read. And then they came to you, presumably, sometime in the mid-60s, the creator of Gilligan's Island had an idea for a show about a blended family, mother with daughters, father with sons. What was your reaction when you first heard about this show?
Well, it was in 1969, and I thought, wow, you know, I really didn't want to do a TV series. You know, I had my own act, and I was performing in Vegas and doing all these exciting things. And my manager said, well, just go down and meet them. I thought it was great and it was fun, but I thought, well, I guess it didn't sell. And then I get the lead in the movie Song of Norway, and I'm over in Norway filming, and I get a message that the Brady Bunch sold. And so they started the show without me. They did 6 episodes without me, and then I filled in when I got back to the States.
Yes. And the Brady Bunch, as I don't need to tell anybody, well, certainly my age, became like the signal television.
How old are you?
I am old enough to have watched it in the original series. How's that?
You sound like a baby.
Oh, thank you.
I was always curious. They never get into the backstory about how Carol and Mike met. They just was straight up in this relationship. Oh. What was it like a meetup? Because it was pre-internet. This was pre-internet.
Well, they never talked much about our spouses, you know? And people often ask me what happened to my first husband. And I say I killed him.
Really? You were like the stepmother and nobody knew.
That's right. If you don't behave, look out.
Well, you were raising your own family at the same time you were doing the show, right?
Right. I had 4 children. And my youngest, when we started, was like, oh gosh, 2 or a little less. And sometimes my kids would say to me, you know, how come you don't scream at those kids on television like you do us?
And what did you say?
I said, because they're not my real kids, and you are, and I want you to turn out to be wonderful human beings. And they have. I have 4 of the most incredible children, and I have 5 grandchildren.
And do the grandchildren watch the Brady Bunch?
You know what? I don't sort of encourage it. I mean, they know I'm on television, but I'm just kind of Grandma Flo. You know?
I understand.
That's a rap name.
That's good. Grandma Flo. That's got the flow.
That's a hip hop name.
You might look into that for your next career. You've had a lot.
Yeah, I'm still hot.
Oh.
Oh. I'll say you are.
All right.
Uh-oh, Bill.
Here we go.
The door.
I was looking for a segue into this topic.
Yeah.
You handed it to me.
Oh, great. I could read your mind.
I know you could. One of the great myths of my childhood, I should say my adolescence, you know, when you get to like junior high school at my age, somebody said, did you know that Mrs. Brady went on a date with Greg Brady, i.e. you, the actress Florence Henderson? The rumor was dated Barry Williams, I think his name was, who played Greg Brady.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Is it true?
It was the most innocent, sweetest date, and he couldn't even drive without a licensed driver. His brother drove him to my hotel, and then he drove, and I, you know, I was the licensed driver. And
wait a minute, stop. How old was he?
He was about 15.
Wait a minute. This is even weirder than it seemed in junior high school. Go on.
Really, it wasn't weird at all, but listen.
No, I am sorry.
Oh, Peter, you're so melodramatic. I think you're a little jealous, maybe.
A little bit. Especially because Greg Brady, or rather Barry Williams, wrote a book called Growing Up Brady.
Right.
And in this book, he described you as, quote, and I'm going to go on for a while, so be patient, quote, a totally white-hot babe. I mean, just once, put the apron and the six kids out of your mind and take a good long look at her. Almost from day one, my feelings toward Florence were more carnal than filial, unquote.
Carnal. Carnal.
So did he say that? You're driving him around because you have a license and he doesn't. And he looks across at you and says, you know, Florence, my feelings for you are more carnal than filial.
No, he wrote that book much later.
Can I ask, what was your Vegas act like, and what did you wear?
Oh, my God. You guys just sound like a horny bunch of little guys.
I am guessing that you run into that a lot.
Oh, gosh. I have a website, and I get, apropos of what you're talking about,
yes,
so many emails saying, you know, I'm in my 40s, and I've been in love with you. You know, everybody thought Marcia was this and that, but you are the one. If you ever are in Vancouver, call me. I'd love to take you to dinner. That is very sweet.
I'm sure it is.
And I answer them.
Do you? What do you say?
Nope.
I say thank you.
Florence Henderson, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
They said you were mad at the Academy. Mad, I tell you.
Now, a few weeks ago, the Annals of Improbable Research, that's a journal, handed out their annual Ig Nobel Awards for achievements in real, if ridiculous, science. We're going to ask you three questions about the far horizons of science. Answer two of these questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is the immortal Florence Henderson playing for?
Sharon Gavin of Atlanta, Georgia.
All right.
Oh, my gosh. I'll feel terrible if I don't win. Can I send her something?
You may. Or perhaps her husband might be more appreciative. We don't know. Whatever works. But let's play the game. All right, here we go. Here's your first question. The Ig Nobel Prize in Physics this year went to a team in Japan that investigated what? Did they investigate A, what would happen to an average building if Godzilla were really to step on it? B, the actual amount of friction between a person's shoe, a banana peel, and the floor? Or C, how big Angelina Jolie's lips could become before they explode?
You know what? I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. What would happen to an average building if Godzilla were to stomp on it?
Yeah.
Okay. No, actually, it was B, the banana peel.
Oh.
Are you serious?
I am very serious, and so were they. According to their exacting measurements, we can now say for sure that a banana peel on a linoleum floor is slippery.
Ooh.
You have two more chances, so you can do this.
Okay.
And we always know Mrs. Brady always had a happy ending, so here we go.
Okay.
A special prize was given in Arctic science, and that was given to an international team of scientists who explored what question? A, if ice cubes taken from the polar ice cap can improve a cocktail. B, if putting up big fans on the poles to blow on the Arctic ice can help reverse global warming. Or C, how reindeer behave when they are approached by humans dressed as polar bears.
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez. What was A again?
A was if ice cubes taken from the ancient polar ice cap will actually make your cocktail taste better.
I think I have to go with that.
That's like a Dean Martin kind of question.
That is a Dean Martin kind of question.
Can I weigh in? It doesn't...
Yeah, help me out.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that sounds wasteful. What was the second one?
Blowing a fan is going to help global warming?
Yeah, that sounds ridiculous.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other one was the
last one was how reindeer behave when they are approached by humans wearing polar bear suits.
I'm liking that one. I'm liking that one.
Oh, I think I have to stay with A.
Really? I want to point out, you may not know this, but Amy is an advice columnist.
Yeah.
She's very wise.
I like number three.
There we go. Yes, you're right. Hey. It turns out, and this is again according to this very scientific study, that reindeer are kind of freaked out when people dress as polar bears approach them. All right, Florence, get this one right, you win. The Public Health Prize went to a team that tried to determine if doing what was detrimental to your mental health. Is it A, trying to get your cable hooked up, B, playing the computer game Candy Crush, or C, owning a cat?
Wow.
I own a cat.
It's bad for your mental health.
Yes. And Roy just said he owns a cat, which to me is sort of proof right there.
That's true.
Well, all right, let's go with number three.
Yes, that's right. So they publish a number of studies that involve various things like parasites that cats sometimes have, but the short answer is yes, cats make you crazy. Bill, how did Florence Henderson do on our quiz?
Well, Florence and Amy got two out of three.
Florence Henderson was, is, and always will be America's favorite TV mom. Florence Henderson, what fun to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
For being with us on the Earth and
Home. I love you.
Take care, Florence.
Bye.
We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mail carrier picks it up. No more wasting time going to that post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this very podcast can use the promo code WAIT, W-A-I-T, for a special offer, a no-risk trial plus a digital scale and free postage. So go over to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in W-A-I-T, WAIT. That's Stamps.com, and enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. So while we are thawing out somewhere, we are revisiting our favorite moments from the past few months. That should give us time to regain the feeling in our hands.
Paula Poundstone comes on our show to answer questions, but sometimes she has questions of her own, as in this show from January of this year.
Amy, a new study from Ohio State University determines that there is a pretty clear way to identify someone who might be a psychopath. They're people who do what a lot?
Go on rampages, obviously.
What? That is one way.
I think they're looking for a preemptive sign.
Yeah. These guys, they like to post a lot of these to Psychobook.
Oh, posting weird messages on Facebook?
Not weird messages. I'll give you a hint. You've done this, I'm sure. We've all done this, but these people tend to do it a lot.
Commenting.
No.
Sharing.
Some people even use sticks to do this a lot.
Sticks on Facebook?
Yes, they're the new specialized sticks. You buy these things, and then you can. It makes it easier to do this.
Selfies?
Yes, people who do a lot of selfies might be psychopaths.
Wait, how do you use?
Oh, selfie stick.
Where have I been? What the hell is a selfie stick?
Oh, Paula.
I feel like I come here and I'm introduced to another world.
Yes. A selfie stick, dear Paula, is an expandable stick, like a expanding rod, that in the end is a little mount for your smartphone. So you can hold your smartphone out to take a selfie of you with a better view than just the length of your arm.
Not everyone has your very long arms, Paula. Some of us need...
Some people have raptor arms.
I think if there's any charm at all in a selfie, and I think we all have enough photos of ourselves now, but if there's any charm at all in a selfie, it is that angle that your arm gives it. Well, I feel that a stick I don't like the idea of a selfie stick.
Well, then you're obviously not a psychopath. That's
I feel good about that.
No, this is the idea. This is the idea. The next time you're scrolling through OkCupid.com or one of those other dating sites, you can automatically rule out any guy whose profile is filled with selfies. Chances are he's a psychopath. Psychologists at Ohio State say that selfies, a lot of them, can show narcissism, impulsiveness, self-objectification, lack of empathy, and vanity, qualities shared only by psychopaths, children between the ages of 7 and 18, and all the single men in your town.
Well, also, something they left off that list, the inability to find anyone else to take a picture of you.
That's also true. And sometimes, even though we are not part of NPR News, we get to break important stories. Faith, our phones, as we all know, can sync up to our car, the lights in our home, our other phones. But now, thanks to a new device, we can also sync them to what?
Can I have a hint, please?
Well, unfortunately, they'll do a lot of things, but they still won't change the diaper.
Wait, they sync up to our babies?
Yes, they do. Or they can, Faith.
How? I need to do this immediately.
Your baby's not synced?
Oh, God. You have one of the old babies.
Oh, yeah. We need baby six.
You totally need to upgrade your baby.
Yeah.
Wait, how does it sync?
Because a lot of the new hot baby content you can't see on that old baby.
No, you can't.
So the new device is called the Pacify. Get it? Passive-I. Mm-hmm. And it's a new Bluetooth-enabled pacifier that syncs your baby to an app. So you put the pacifier in the baby, and then you can monitor with your iPhone the baby's sleep, temperature, and location from up to 50 meters away or just out of smell range. And if you lose your baby, you can use the Find My Baby app. Or as it's called, the I Am a Terrible Parent app.
So this assumes your baby takes a pacifier.
Yeah.
Which many babies don't.
Well, what do they do?
They take a nipple mo.
Oh. Well, you
so I need an eye nipple.
You need an eye nipple.
Eye nipple. Yeah.
Eye nipple.
You're not really going to be looking for your baby.
That's a good point.
Yes. Now, that's only one company is offering a plan for this. It's
what?
AT&T.
Or Teat Mobile.
Teat Mobile. That's true.
Moz, just in time for Hanukkah, Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling gave us a present. She revealed what?
Another Harry Potter book coming?
Well, she did, in fact, say there'll be some more Harry Potter stories on her website, but that's not what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She told the fans via tweet something very interesting about Hogwarts.
Hogwarts was actually a Hebrew school.
And I say this for all Jews everywhere. Oh, I wish. But no, you're close, though. You're close. You're very close. It was a Hanukkah-themed gift, if you will.
It's a Hanukkah-themed gift.
To her readers, specifically her Jewish readers.
Mm.
To her Jewish readers, Hanukkah-themed gift.
She told us something about Hogwarts.
Hogwarts. There were a lot of dreidels there.
Well, if there were a dreidel there, it would mean that at Hogwarts there was a
Jewish kid.
Yes, there was. She has revealed that at Hogwarts there was at least one Jewish wizard. There you go. This is true.
Wow.
It's like
the guy with the yarmulke, wasn't he?
That's how you can tell. They picked his house by sitting under the sorting yarmulke. J.K. Rowling revealed that there was a Jewish kid at Hogwarts named Anthony Goldstein in Ravenclaw, naturally. It makes sense with all the adventures and mischief that Harry and his friends are off to. They had to copy their homework from somebody.
Was he actually in the stories, or she just made it up at the last minute?
I'm not quite sure. She says that he was there in the first book, and so he might be mentioned. But she has said things about the characters prior that aren't clear in the books. Like, for example, she has told us that Dumbledore was gay.
Dumbledore was gay.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Are you shocked?
A little.
Yeah.
Lifelong
bachelor.
Yeah.
Very neat.
I don't think those are the only traits. I don't think that's even the main trait.
No. The reason there's only one Jew at Hogwarts is no Jewish mother in her right mind would risk her kid going there. Are you kidding? I heard a girl got paralyzed by a basilisk there. Over my dead body, you're going to this place.
Yeah, but they never took that holiday.
No.
You know, I love the Jewish holidays. I mean, left to us atheists, there'd be nothing.
That's true.
We'd just be working all year long.
Speaking of Hogwarts, we hosted its most famous graduate, Harry Potter, last November.
To maintain some privacy, Harry pretends to be an actor, Daniel Radcliffe. We began by asking him about his image.
Thank you very much.
Not to beat around the bush any further, Dan, you of course starred as Harry Potter in all the movies, and
yes.
We watched so many of them with my children, it felt like you were also a member of the family.
Yeah.
Albeit a more obedient and cheerful one.
And magical.
And magical. So, but I sat down this week and I watched your new movie, Horns, and I didn't have a timer, but it seemed in the first 5 minutes you smoked, drank, swore like a sailor, I believe you urinated on a religious shrine and generally behaved very badly. And I want to ask you, how good did that feel?
It was pretty great. I mean, not necessarily urinating on a religious shrine.
No, of course not.
That's not something that I've like longed to do for ages. But it's nice to play a part that is so different. And I get like, he's kind of a badass in this film.
You do, in fact, grow horns.
Yes.
Which is a look.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of the people out there who always thought Harry Potter was satanic are going, aha, I told you.
Yeah, I know, but I sort of enjoy annoying those people. I mean, we all work with
things. There are so many things to ask you about as the star of the most profitable and probably most widely seen film series of all time. But let's just start with the action figures and toys. If I were to go to your house, would I see any Harry Potter memorabilia, any little Daniel Radcliffe's and your friends?
No. You'd see, what have I got? You know what you're more likely to find? It's like sort of homemade Harry Potter dolls that I get sort of given, or not by me, I hated them.
That would be hilarious if you sat around all day.
Yeah, that's what I've been spending my time with.
Yes.
Filming. I've just been making dolls. There's a few of those, but not too many action figures.
I did want to ask you, I mean, again, a lot of questions, but I remember hearing a story once that the original Dumbledore, Richard Harris, couldn't quite remember his lines, and that you said that you actually went in there and asked him to help you run yours, so that he could practice his without you asking him.
Yeah, I was an incredibly politic little child, it turned out. I remember that. I also, one of my other, like, amazing memories of Richard in the second film, there's Forbes Phoenix is there, and it was animatronically operated from guys that were outside the set, and they had a camera, like, in the head of the Phoenix so they could, like, see what people were doing right in front of it so they could interact with it. And Richard 100% thought it was real.
So wait a minute. So this is the magical golden phoenix that Dumbledore has as a pet. And he actually thought that they had found a phoenix of some kind.
He was, like, going up to it, and of course, as soon as he started, like, interacting with it, and the guys outside, like, realized this was happening, they started, like, pandering to it and playing with it more and more. And it was lovely. It was just one of those great moments. But no, he was a lovely, lovely man.
One thing I've always wondered, again, I've seen all of those films many, many times with my family. They made the first film, I guess going back, they cast it back in like 2000, I guess it was, or maybe even earlier. And they cast you and the other then children in the lead roles and many of the supporting roles. And pretty much all of you made it to the final film. And you all did a wonderful job. But none of you went nuts, flamed out, started behaving badly in public places. As far as I know, none of you were seen getting out of a limousine without underwear during the entire decade. Just probability would indicate that's extremely unlikely.
Well, I mean, you think that, but there are also loads of kind of successful cases of people who start young becoming, you know, like Elijah Wood and Tobey Maguire and Jodie Foster and, you know, I mean, I can't think of more.
That's it. It's you guys, those four. Everybody else is like...
But I think for all of us, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but like, there was never a moment when I didn't want to be there. And I'm just lucky that I really, really like my job.
I apparently. We have to ask about this because you blew up the internet with your rendition of Alphabet Aerobics, the rap thing by Blackalicious.
Yeah.
You did it on The Tonight Show. And
yes.
People were amazed. Is this like, I mean, are you going to do like the Bruce Willis thing and go from acting into music now?
Did Bruce Willis do that?
Oh, you are young. he did. He tried, I think it was called like The Return of Bruno, I think his album was called.
Wow, that's yeah. A great album name.
Yes, isn't it though?
I'm going to get that immediately.
No, I think you should.
I think the website's available.
But no, I can officially like shut down any idea that I'm, this is not me sort of auditioning for my changing career. This
no.
is just a weird thing that I can do.
I'm telling you, this could work out for you with this acting thing in the end. Well, Daniel Radcliffe, yeah. What a pleasure to talk to you in person. But we have invited you here today to play a game we're calling.
Sure, you're Harry Potter, but what do you know about Harry Pottery?
Oh, dear.
Harry Pottery. In other words, chia pets. Those strange little planters that grow chia leaves, looking amusingly like hair. We're going to ask you three questions about chia pets, and if you get two right, you win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl Castle's voice in their voicemail. Bill, who is Daniel Radcliffe playing for?
Abhijit Lakia of Panjim, India.
That's interesting. It'll be far enough away so that if you screw this up, you probably won't run into her.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Here's your first question. Chia pets come in many shapes and models, including special holiday editions. You could, if you wanted, buy which of these? A chia zombie for Halloween, B, a chia John Hancock for the 4th of July, or C, a chia dead firstborn son for Passover.
Oh, I mean, they'd all be good,
wouldn't they?
I'm gonna go with A because that seems the most likely.
The chia zombie. The audience agrees, yeah. And you are right. It is, in fact,
yeah.
What it is. It's a, like a little zombie arm emerging from a chia lawn. You can pick that up for your shelf.
That's pretty nice. I'm going to go and find some chia pets. Up.
Probably. We're making a shopping list. Chia pets.
I'm going to have an evening of Bruce Willis music and chia pets.
There you are. And that's the life we always imagined you living, I have to say. All right, you have two more chances. Let's go. Sometimes chia fans create their own chia pets to honor certain people they may admire, including which of these? A, Liberace. B, billionaire investor Warren Buffett. Or C, Saddam Hussein.
This is tricky, but I'm sorry, I don't know how that noise sounded. Fine, by the way. I like the idea of a Warren Buffett chia pet. Please tell me that's true.
I can't do that, Daniel. As much as I admire you, it's Saddam Hussein. The Saddam Hussein chia was allegedly marketed under the name Chia Thug. When the plants grew in, it looked like Saddam Hussein's hair and beard. Nobody has been able to find one outside of a photograph of the box, so it may not be real, but we can hope so. All right. This is exciting. You have one more chance to get this right and win our prize for our listener. Joseph Enterprises is the company that makes chia pets, always has. It's also responsible for other as-seen-on-TV products you can purchase for your home, including which of these? A, mandals, which are candles for men. They come in scents like fresh fish, kegger, and auto shop. Or B, the literal insanity workout DVDs, an exercise series led by the inmates at the Danvers State Hospital. Or C, the Shamu Wow, a super absorbent towel to clean your marine mammals.
Oh, what? One of them is real?
Yes, mandals.
Okay, I'm gonna go with the candles one, the ridiculous candles.
You're gonna go with mandals? You're right, Daniel. Very good. You can buy mandals. Some other flavors or scents that mandals come in. Swimsuit model. What does that smell like? Space cake and stripper's mouth. That's minty fresh breath. Bill Curtis, how did Daniel Radcliffe do in our quiz?
Enough to win 2 out of 3.
Yeah. That's great. Nobody expected anything less from you, Dan. Daniel Radcliffe is a star of stage and screen. His new movie, Horns, is in theaters and in video demand now. Daniel Radcliffe, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hey, support for our podcast is brought to you this week from Netflix with House of Cards, the Netflix original series that the New York Times calls Netflix's groundbreaking political masterpiece. Now in the power seat of DC politics, the Underwoods must watch their backs as allies and enemies from the past can bring everything crashing down around them. Ooh, sounds interesting. From executive producer David Fincher, starring Golden Globe winner Kevin Spacey as the ruthless Frank Underwood, and Robin Wright as his cunning wife, Claire. Watch all episodes of the Netflix original series, House of Cards, on February 27th. That's only on Netflix.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Since we are away from the office this week, we thought we'd spend some time remembering some past trips. Last September, we went to Seattle to interview travel guru Rick Steves, who told us how he got the travel bug in the first place.
You know, I remember a long time ago there was Roots, and everybody was tracking their roots and wanting to see tombstones with their names on it and stuff like that.
Well, Roots like, you know, like Alex Haley's roots.
That's right, and that didn't do anything for me, but I wanted to find my cultural roots, which happened to be in Europe. So
right.
I got over there, and it was quite interesting. There was different candy, different pop. I remember statuesque women in Germany with hairy armpits.
Oh. You're a 14-year-old boy. You go over to Germany like, oh, they have different candy. And then you notice the women with hairy armpits.
It had quite an impact on me.
I can imagine. You've made a career out of it. Now, you have these very large number of fans, people who follow your books and which are best-selling, and your TV shows, your specials on PBS. And they're called Ricknicks?
That's what I've heard, yes.
Yes. And
I don't know. I don't actually know where that came from, but I hear it a lot. And I guess there's a lot of people that are looking for somebody to sort through all the superlatives and tell them, if you got limited time, do this and not that. Normally,
right.
People are just raving about everything, but that doesn't help you. You know, I'm tired of hearing people
so
say.
So do you actually say, I mean, will you tell people, you know, everybody goes over here, don't go over there, it's terrible, it's a tourist trap, avoid it.
Yes.
It's like, give me an example. Tell the world someplace they shouldn't go that they think they might need to go.
Don't go to Oxford.
Don't go to Oxford?
Really? Now, here's the reason.
Please.
Americans have the shortest vacations in the rich world. And if you've got a short vacation, which we generally do, and you're going to England, the question is not, is Oxford good or bad? The question is Oxford or Cambridge better for your trip? And I think Cambridge is more fun as a sightseeing point of view.
There you are. It is, in fact, very lovely.
And then you save time for something entirely different, which is really fun.
Has anybody ever mistreated you? I'm sure it happens. You travel all over the world. And people have treated you rudely or ripped you off. And then you say to yourself in your best, you know, like Emperor Palpatine voice, I shall destroy you.
I got in a little bit of a tiff with the tourist people in the little town of Vicenza in Italy because they wouldn't provide a place for travelers to check their bag for the day if they're side-tripping in from Venice, which is like less than an hour away by train. And for two or three years, I came back and I said, all of these people with my book are coming to your town and there's no place for them to leave their bag. They're not going to spend the night. They just want to check the bag for 3 hours. And if you don't have a place to check bags at the train station, I'm going to take you out of my book. And I finally had to take Vicenza, the entire town, out of my book. Because they wouldn't do that at the
time. That's an immense power, Mr. C.
Oh, it's fun to do that. And
do you ever, when you are dealing with somebody and maybe the tourist board isn't agreeable, do you ever just say one word? Vicenza.
No, but
I ever say one word to you.
You know the problem with.
Have you ever heard of a town called Vicenza?
Right.
Exactly. You know why not? Now, people who have seen you in PBS might be surprised to learn that, in addition to your travel, you're a huge pot advocate, right?
I've worked on that for 10 or 12 years now. I'm a board member of Normal.
Does your advocacy in this issue ever sort of conflict with your vast audience and readership? I mean, would they be surprised to know this?
Yeah, once in a blue moon, somebody will email me and say, I know what you think about marijuana, and we're not going to take your tours or read your guidebooks, and all I can think is Europe's going to be more fun without you.
Yeah! So
So this this marijuana enthusiasm explains why your top recommendation of things to do in Paris is just sort of look at the sky. I'm glad you found that funny. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I've been there.
Yeah. Well, Rick Steves, it's a pleasure to talk to you. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're Rick Steves. What do you know about Steve Ricks?
Despite your many travels, Rick Steves, you've probably never crossed paths with many people in the world named Steve Ricks. So we're going to ask you three questions about these people who are sort of your reverse doppelgangers. Get two right, you'll win a prize of one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice in their voicemail. Bill, who is Rick Steves playing for?
Kyle Roylance Hart of Seattle, Washington.
There you go.
All right.
So we got on Google, and we found that there is a, quote, bespoke tailor out there named Steve Ricks. What is Steve Ricks' tailor? What is his specialty? A, custom-tailored hazmat suits for discerning emergency workers. B, exact replicas of the outfits of each of the 11 different Doctor Whos, or I think we're up to 12 now. Or C, custom-made and custom-fitted cod pieces.
The only one I can really envision is C.
You're going to have a C, like
C,
custom.
Yeah.
So if you want your cod piece, you want it to be comfortable, you want it to be fit. No, actually, it was B, the Doctor Who outfits.
Wow.
If you're a Doctor Who fan and you want to dress like, say, the Ninth Doctor, then you call him up and he will make your suit look exactly like Doctor Who.
Wow, that's a great service.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
All right, so you still have two more chances. There's a number of musicians out there named Steve Ricks, including one whose art form is what? A, mixtapes to listen to while you're stoned. B, collages of found traffic noise. Or C, well, he's a male Stevie Nicks impersonator.
Whoa. Well, I can't picture Steve Ricks being a male Stevie Nicks. So.
We just sing all the songs, I guess, in a much lower register.
Yeah.
But move on. Okay.
Okay, I'll go with, just to keep up with the theme, A.
You're going to go A, mixtapes to listen to while you're stoned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the answer.
Ah. Yes.
All right. All right.
You and he have more than just your names in common. All right, this is exciting. You have one more. If you get this right, you win. Deep down in the Google results, we found a Steve Ricks mentioned in what book? A, the Mammoth Book of Killers Still at Large. B, How to Make Anything Out of Masking Tape. Or C, A Man, A Plan, Another Canal, Gowanus.
What?
I love the idea of masking tape. I'll go with B.
Masking tape?
Is that what it was? I'll go A then.
The Mammoth Book of Killers Still at Large.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow.
All right.
Good.
Woo for you.
If you're sleeping too well, I recommend to you The Mammoth Book of Killers Still at Large. No worry, Mr. Ricks is merely a witness to a victim's disappearance, not actually one of those killers. Bill, how did Rick Steves do in our quiz?
2 out of 3, so he's going to have a happy trip next time.
Congratulations. Rick Steves is America's best-selling guidebook writer and host of the public television show Rick Steves Europe. Rick Steves, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
Son of Edmund.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo. Toronto.
Then in November, we went down to Austin, Texas. And when you're in Austin, you talk to musicians. And if you want to talk to musicians, you talk to Dale Watson. But whatever you do, don't call him the king of country music.
I play Ameripolitan music. Actually.
Yeah, and I've read about this. Ameripolitan music. You have decided that the word country music has been... degraded, misused?
Well, no, it just doesn't describe what I grew up to know as country music anymore. I like to say that the definition is original music with prominent roots influence. It started with Jimmy Rogers and Hank Williams and Kitty Wells. So it started there and it goes on. And if you can hear the influence of an artist in another artist, then that's your roots.
Right.
And to me, the mainstream stuff's coming out of Nashville. It's got their roots firmly planted in midair. They have no roots whatsoever.
Hey, so Dale, how do you feel about the banjo?
There's a thing called perfect pitch. You ever heard of perfect pitch?
Yeah, people who can hear a note and know exactly.
No. It's when you throw an accordion in a dumpster, and it doesn't hit the rim and it lands on a banjo.
For people, Dale, who are not lucky enough to have heard you play around Texas, where you play all the time in your own club in Austin, what songs are you known for?
Probably, I Lie When I Drink. I Lie When I Drink. I drink a lot.
There you go. When I told people you were going to be in the show, the people from Austin who I told, they said, well, you got to ask him about his Sunday gig every Sunday. And I know it's going to be difficult, but we'll try to talk about it in a public radio way.
Chicken poop bingo. For a paltry $2 donation, you can win over $100 if the same number that's in the bag you draw out is the same number that Chicken picks in her chicken picking way.
All right. So you've got some sort of like dirt thing on the floor.
It's free hot dogs and...
Free hot dogs.
And $2 loan stores, yes.
All right.
Well, it'd be weird to eat chicken in front of the chickens.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It wasn't really motivating.
So the way this works is you've got, like, it marked down on a floor, maybe a dirt floor. I haven't been there, I'm guessing.
No.
No, it's not dirt floor?
Cement floor.
Cement floor. You've got it marked out with numbers. Cement. That's what they have here in Texas. So you got your cement floor. You got it marked out with numbers. And you have chickens.
No. There's a board that we put on the pool table.
Oh, okay.
And it's got numbers on it. And if the chicken picks that number, then that one you draw out of a bag, then they've won the money.
And the chicken picks the number by relieving itself on the number.
There is a line ticket, which is the luckiest ticket. Mm-hmm. In case it crosses into a line.
Sure, I got it.
Yeah.
Is it the same chicken every week?
We've been doing it for so long. I think we're on our sixth chicken now.
Do you have a lucky chicken?
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
No.
That's rather personal, Tom.
I know. The thing is, we've had them pass away. I never knew how long a chicken could live, but they can. That'd be a good long time. But
they're tenacious.
But we've had one killed by the chupacabra.
I want to hear about the chupacabra. Eating your chicken.
Well, we assume it was because the chicken's body was still in the chicken coop and the head was on the outside.
Whoa.
Could have been the mafia.
Could have been the mafia.
Yeah.
Texas mafia.
You know how they thought it was the mafia? Because its feet were in a little tub of cement. Yeah. Dale Watson, we are so enjoying talking to you, but we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Elementary, my dear Dale.
Should have seen this coming.
I love the way Bill says that.
Don't you? I love the way he says anything. So you're a Watson, but what do you know about Holmes? We're going to ask you three questions about the immortal detective Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, man.
Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, the voice of Carl Castle himself, on their voicemail. So, Bill, who is Dale Watson playing for?
Elizabeth Day of Austin, Texas.
She's out there somewhere. Here.
Elizabeth, let me just first say, Elizabeth, I'll make this up to you.
Here is your first question, Dale. The BBC version of Sherlock, you might have seen it. It's a huge hit in China. They lovingly refer to the stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman by nicknames, which are what? A, Rizzoli and Isles. B, the Captain and Garfunkel. Or C, Curly Fu and Peanut.
Okay.
You're thinking.
I am. I'm not used to it. I'm going to go with Curly.
Curly Foo?
Peanut.
Curly Foo and Peanut is the right answer. Yeah. Curly for Benedict Cumberbatch's luxurious hair, and Foo is a Chinese derivation of Holmes, apparently. All right. Two more questions. Sherlock
Holmes. Wait, where's the peanut?
Well, peanut is Martin Freeman. I guess he's smaller than... He's a rather short man, so I guess that's where that comes from. Sherlock Holmes, some believe, is the most filmed character ever, right? More movies with Sherlock Holmes than any other human character. Which of these is the title of a real Sherlock Holmes film? Is it A, Tom and Jerry Meet Sherlock Holmes, B, Sherlock 2, Sherlocker, or C, Holmes on the Range?
Well, now, could one of them be a cartoon? Is that what you're talking about?
One of them could be a cartoon.
Okay, well, I'm going with it. Tom and Jerry.
You're right, Tom and Jerry. You too.
Wow.
Now, one more question. Let's see if you're perfect. Hundreds of people around the world write to Sherlock Holmes for help each year. And these letters end up at the Sherlock Holmes Museum in London. Now, most are pleased to help solve mysteries. Oh, please, Mr. Holmes. There's one letter on display at the museum that is what? Is it an email from a Nigerian prince asking for Sherlock Holmes' help in a business opportunity? Is it B, a postcard from a local optician reminding Mr. Sherlock Holmes it's time for his checkup? Or is it C, a J. Crew catalog addressed to Sherlock Holmes and advertising their fall collection of Deerstalker hats?
All right. I'm going to say the catalog.
The catalog. No, I'm afraid it was the optician.
Was it really?
Yep, an optician wrote to Sherlock Holmes saying, you're ready for your next eye appointment. When their last one was, we don't know.
Didn't he have just one thing, monocle?
No. You're confusing him with somebody I can't even imagine
with
right
now. With Mr. Peanut.
That's Mr. Peanut, yes. Bill, how did Dale Watson do on our quiz?
2 out of 3, and that's a winner, Dale.
Yes, it is.
Good afternoon.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. Dale Watson, thank you so much for being a Way Way Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained exotic and domestic hardwood, bamboo, and cork. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax.com. And Care.com, offering home pay, a solution for nanny payroll, tax, and HR obligation. From automatic payments to preparing state and federal tax returns. Learn more at care.com/NPR. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, Philip Godica, Rizzo Limericks, our house manager. His name is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our intern is Gene Netflix Harris Quartz. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Les Larchick at our home at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Her CFO is Andy Ann. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me once again is Mr. Michael Danforth. Thanks to all of our panelists, our listener contestants, our celebrity guests, Mr. Bill Curtis, and of course our scorekeeper emeritus, Carl Castle. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week with an all-new version of Wait, Don't Tell Me. This is NPR.